Hello. Welcome to our press teleconference. My name is Tom Pelton, and I'm Director of Communications for the Environmental Integrity Project. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to enforcing environmental laws to protect public health. Today, we are working with our allies at Earth Justice, Environment Georgia, Altamaha Riverkeeper, and the Southern Environmental Law Center to release a new report by the Environmental Integrity Project and Earth Justice titled, Georgia at a Crossroads, Groundwater Contamination from Coal Ash Threatens the Peach State. It is available on our website at www.environmentalintegrity.org and also on earthjustice.org. We are going to have five speakers today and then take questions from reporters. To ask a question, press star 1. Before we get started, we have one minor correction in the report if any of you received an early embargoed copy of the report. On pages 7 and 10 of the report, we updated the report to reflect the fact that Georgia Power now plans to remove ash from the pond at the Harlee Branch plant and partially removed the ash at the Bowen plant. Okay, first, we're going to hear from Abel Russ, senior attorney from the Environmental Integrity Project and co-author of the Georgia at a Crossroads report. Second, we're going to have Lisa Evans, senior counsel for Earth Justice and co-author of the report. Third, Jeanette Geyer, director of Environment Georgia. Fourth, we're going to have Jen Hilburn, the Altamaha Riverkeeper. And fifth, as a speaker, April Lipscomb, staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. Abel Russ of the Environmental Integrity Project, why don't you start us off?
Thanks, Tom. As Tom mentioned, I'm an attorney, but I also do a lot of the research at Environmental Integrity Project, and I've been working with our research analysts on coal ash data in Georgia and other states for the last several months. I'm also involved in federal litigation over the coal ash rule and related federal regulations dealing with coal ash. To quickly summarize what we found, our report found that virtually all of the coal plants in Georgia have one or more leaking coal ash disposal units, including either impoundments or landfills. And as a result, the groundwater at most coal plants in Georgia is contaminated with unsafe levels of one or more toxic contaminants. Usually it's several contaminants. Coal ash, as its name suggests, is the ash left over from burning coal, and you know, coal has a long list of toxic metals and other chemicals in it, and when the coal is burned, all of those toxic pollutants are concentrated in the ash that's left over, and then when ash is put in a place where it can come into contact with water, all of those toxic pollutants can leach out and migrate through groundwater to either residential wells or to local surface water bodies, where they present risks to human health and the environment. This happens constantly in Georgia because virtually all the coal ash ponds and landfills are unlined or poorly lined. Most of them are exposed to precipitation with some form of cap or maybe no cap, and most of them are very close to the groundwater or in the groundwater, so the ash is exposed to water that way as well. And the list of contaminants includes several carcinogens, several neurotoxins, and a bunch of chemicals that are toxic to aquatic life. To give you just one example, most of these sites look similar in the extent of contamination and in the sort of the characteristics of the contamination, but at Plant Bowen near U-Harlee, the groundwater has unsafe levels of multiple pollutants, like I mentioned before, boron, cobalt, molybdenum, radium, sulfate, and boron levels in particular are up to 10 times higher than what EPA considers safe, and boron is notable as a chemical that poses risks to both human health and aquatic ecosystems. And the contamination at Bowen is largely coming from an unlined ash pond that Georgia Power is planning to close at least partially in place, even though it is likely sitting in groundwater. And this is unfortunately typical of most of the sites in the state. 7 plants have unsafe levels of boron, 10 sites have unsafe levels of cobalt, 5 have unsafe levels of arsenic, and so on. So that's sort of a high-level summary, and the details plant by plant can be found in the report. I'm also happy to take questions about that after. But to give you a little bit of background about how we got to this point, the Environmental Integrity Project has been collecting and analyzing groundwater data near coal plants for almost 10 years. And for most of that time, we only had data that were generated pursuant to state law. And that data set was patchy and inconsistent. In some states, there wasn't any monitoring. In some states, there was some monitoring, but maybe not for all of the pollutants that are associated with coal ash. But to the extent that we could get data, we obtained that data through information requests, and we posted the data on an interactive map-based website we maintain called Ash Tracker, and it's at ashtracker.org. Most of the data for most of the plants in this report can be found and manipulated on that website, ashtracker.org. And then last year, the federal monitoring requirements kicked in, and that was significant for at least two reasons. First, this is the first time that we've had a comprehensive, internally consistent inventory of groundwater quality data from across the country. And second, the coal ash rule required monitoring for several toxic pollutants that were usually ignored under state law, including things like cobalt, lithium, and molybdenum. The new data were not necessarily user-friendly. Most of these reports are hundreds or even thousands of pages long, and we had to go through all of the lab reports appended to the reports to extract the data. And the significance of the data isn't always clear. So our immediate task was extracting all of that data, analyzing it, and interpreting it for the general public. And that's something that the U.S. EPA is not doing, unfortunately, so we felt it was an important thing to do. And there are over 250 coal plants worth of data from the U.S., and so we've been working since March to get as much of that done as we can, and we've been doing these state-level summaries as we complete the database for each state. And so we finished Georgia recently, and then we put out this report. And I won't take up too much time here, but I do want to just close with two quick observations. First, a lot of attention is paid to active or recently closed ash ponds, but in my experience, groundwater contamination at coal plants is just as likely to come from landfills or units that are unregulated, meaning ponds that closed 5 or 10 years ago or longer, and they're sitting there covered with grass or trees even, but they're still full of coal ash and still exposed to groundwater. There are many landfills at the Georgia power plant that should now be in assessment monitoring, but are not. And we've seen evidence of some of these older abandoned ash dumps that are basically not on the regulatory map at all, even though they should be. And so we believe the only way to truly restore groundwater and protect surface water is to address each coal plant in its entirety. Second, separation from groundwater is probably the critical factor in an adequate cleanup at any of these sites. And it looks like most coal ash disposal areas in Georgia are sitting in the groundwater, or at least very, very close to it. And closing these units in place is a recipe for long-term contamination, because regardless of whatever kind of cap you put over the top, groundwater is going to continue to slosh through those units and leach out toxic pollutants for decades. And so we encourage the state and Georgia Power to ensure that no coal ash is left buried in the groundwater at any site. And I will stop there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Abel. To kind of sum up some of the numbers that Abel was talking about, 11 of 12, or about 90%, of the coal-fired power plants in Georgia for which data are available are leaking contaminants into groundwater. And that was Abel Russ, A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, Senior Attorney for the Environmental Integrity Project and co-author of the report. Next, we have Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel for Earth Justice and co-author of the report. Her last name is spelled E-V-A-N-S, Lisa Evans. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to all who have joined us this afternoon. As Tom said, my name is Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel at Earth Justice, and Earth Justice is a national nonprofit law firm dedicated to protecting health and the environment and serving all clients free of charge. My background is in hazardous waste, and I have been working on the coal ash issue since 2000. And I would like to provide a national perspective, put the contamination that we have documented in Georgia into a national context. As Abel has just described, Georgia's coal plants have poisoned nearby waters with toxic ash. But this is not a problem unique to Georgia. The widespread contamination in Georgia is what we are seeing in every state that burns coal. Because EPA now requires that all coal plants reveal what hazardous chemicals they've put in groundwater, the impact of toxic coal ash is finally unmasked. And in response to a recent deadline requiring all plant owners to reveal the location of their toxic ponds, we know that the majority of waste ponds in the U.S., like those in Georgia, are actually sitting in aquifers. Today, we have a crystal clear picture, not only for Georgia, but for the entire nation, of the serious harm caused by the coal industry's dangerous toxic dumping. One has to realize that there are more than 1,000 coal ash ponds and landfills in the U.S., threatening communities nationwide. I want to examine quickly the national data and then look at how the Trump EPA is responding. Here are three major takeaways based on industry's disclosures as required by the 2015 coal ash rule. First, the nationwide contamination of groundwater is severe. More than 95% of the nation's toxic coal ash ponds and landfills are leaking hazardous chemicals and at unsafe levels to groundwater. In an upcoming report, Earth Justice and EIP will show exactly where and how. And just like in Georgia, the groundwater is poisoned with unsafe levels of arsenic, cobalt, and other toxins. And just like in Georgia, communities have no idea whether this contamination has poisoned drinking water because the states have not systematically tested wells near the leaking dumps. Second, toxic ash ponds are violating federal standards by sitting in our aquifers. The federal coal ash rule requires a 5-foot separation from the bottom of a coal ash pond to the underlying aquifer. No regulated coal ash pond in Georgia meets this requirement, and the same is true with the majority of toxic ash ponds across the U.S. In Georgia and across the nation, toxic ash ponds are sitting in our aquifers and oozing their hazardous cargo. These contaminated aquifers are often the source of drinking water, and they flow into nearby lakes and streams, potentially killing aquatic life and making water too contaminated for swimming or fishing. These waterways may also be sources of drinking water, irrigation, or water for livestock, all of which may be permanently harmed. Third, utility companies plan to walk away from leaking toxic ash ponds. Many plant owners across the U.S. vow to never remove toxic ash from the groundwater at their sites. Across the nation, utilities like Georgia Power intend to keep hazardous ash in ponds permanently, even when these ponds are sitting and leaking into aquifers. This will leave a never-ending source of contamination that threatens our health and environment and violates federal law. It is wrong as well as illegal for Georgia Power or any utility to leave their toxic mess to harm future generations, and it's the responsibility of the power plant owner to ensure that their waste disposal is safe and at closure to ensure a permanent, clean future for their neighbors. These three urgent nationwide problems have come to light because of the data required by the EPA's 2015 first-ever coal ash rule. So what is the Trump administration doing about this? EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler's outrageous plan is to kill the messenger and get rid of the rule. The 2015 rule blew the whistle on coal ash by requiring public disclosures of the harm coal ash is wreaking, but the Trump administration is covering its ears. Instead of taking action to protect people by strengthening the rule, Andrew Wheeler, a former coal lobbyist, is doing the dirty bidding of industry. EPA is making a very bad situation much worse. Last spring, Wheeler ignored the widespread threats to public health and instead proposed a sweeping rollback to significantly weaken groundwater protections, cleanups, and protective siting requirements, among other measures. In fact, last July, the Wheeler EPA finalized its first set of regulations weakening the 2015 rule. The July rules allow unlined leaking impoundments, which have already demonstrated they have contaminated water above health standards, to continue to operate a year and a half after their deadline to close. The July rule also delays, for the same time period, closure of leaking toxic ponds currently sitting in groundwater. According to EPA, the agency has two additional rollbacks planned. The next gift to industry may even arrive before Christmas. But the Trump administration is running afoul of the law. Recently, the D.C. Court of Appeals, in a case brought by Earth Justice and EIP, ruled that EPA must strengthen, not weaken, the 2015 rule to provide greater health and environmental protection. Whether the Trump EPA complies with the law remains to be seen. If they don't, we will be there in court again to see that they do. Earth Justice and EIP have already filed a challenge to Wheeler's July rule. It is important to note that individual states can do better. States can strengthen their coal ash regulations to protect their citizens and water resources. In some ways, Georgia has done this, but the state has not gone nearly far enough. Georgia citizens must demand greater protection, and you'll hear specific suggestions from my Georgia colleagues today. In sum, the Georgia report is emblematic of a nationwide problem, which is only increasing in severity day by day. We know that nearly all toxic ash dumps in the country are leaking unsafe levels of hazardous chemicals. We know impacts on drinking water are widely known and ignored. We know simply covering over leaking dumps cannot address the core problem. We know coal ash pollution disproportionately harms poor communities and communities of color. And finally, we know Andrew Wheeler's EPA insists on giving utility companies more time to pollute and fewer rules to follow. However, information is power. This is why Earth Justice and EIP make critical data available to impacted communities. As long as communities understand the harm occurring at these toxic sites, there is hope that industry, states, or the EPA will not get away with continuing to endanger our health and pollute our water. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That was Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel for Earth Justice and co-author of the Georgia at a Crossroads report. Her last name is spelled Evans, E-V-A-N-S, Lisa Evans. Next, we have Jeanette Geyer, Director of Environment Georgia. Her name is spelled J-E-N-N-E-T-T-E-G-A-Y-E-R. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Thank you, Tom, and hi, all. This is, again, Jeanette Geyer. I'm the Director of Environment Georgia, which is an organization that works to protect Georgia's air, water, and green spaces. And I'm also the chair of the Georgia Water Coalition, or GWC's, Coal Ash Subcommittee. So the Georgia Water Coalition is a coalition of over 250 organizations in Georgia that work to protect Georgia's water resources, the wildlife that relies on those water resources, and property rights. And Environment Georgia and the Georgia Water Coalition have a long history of working on coal ash and have arrived at a pretty straightforward position that all coal ash needs to be stored in a dry, capped, and lined facility away from waterways. And we've worked actually for several years with some really great champions down at the Georgia legislature to deal with this issue and have also faced a lot of opposition. The reality is before the federal rule, ash ponds in Georgia were completely unregulated. And so we're really excited to see this report and have some very clear data that tells us what I think we all knew already, which is these ash ponds are leaking. And I wanted to draw attention to, I appreciate Abel running through kind of all the ponds, but wanted to draw attention to three really specific ponds at Plant Hammond, or three really specific plants and the ponds around those plants. So Plant Hammond, Plant Wansley, and Yates. So at Plant Hammond near Rome, the groundwater has arsenic levels up to 40 times the federal standard. At Wansley near Carrollton, there are unsafe levels of cobalt, boron, lithium, radium, and sulfates. And at Plant Yates near Newnan, there are unsafe levels of beryllium, boron, and cobalt. I draw attention to these three ponds because they are three of the ponds in Georgia that right now the plan is to basically leave the ash in ponds that are unlined. So I can't remember who on the call already mentioned that the plan around the country in a lot of places is to basically leave this stuff in the aquifer, or very close to the aquifer, with no real plan to address the contamination that's there and will definitely continue in the future. And these, I think, are really perfect examples of that in Georgia. Here are three plants where we have ponds that we know are leaking really dangerous toxins into our groundwater. And the plan right now is to do almost nothing about it. Finally, and Abel also touched on this a little bit, is that we have places where Georgia Power is not testing and reporting, and we know there's contamination. And Plant Arkwright outside of Macon is the perfect example of this. So I think this report does a really good job of capturing a lot of the problems that we're facing in Georgia. The reality is we unfortunately have more problems. So knowledge is power. I'm so excited to have this report to work with moving forward in the future with some of our champions down at the legislature, and I'm happy to join y'all today. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeanette. And to be clear for everyone out there, she was talking about Plant Yates, which is located northwest of Atlanta. That's near Noonan. Plant Wansley, which is near Carrollton in West Georgia. And Plant Hammond, that's in Floyd County. Okay, next we're going to have as our next speaker, Jen Hilburn, the Altamaha Riverkeeper, J-E-N-H-I-L-B-U-R-N. That's how her name is spelled, Jen Hilburn. Go ahead, Jen.
Well, thank you so much, and good afternoon. I am your Altamaha Riverkeeper, and Riverkeepers advocate for clean water, and we advocate for clean water for our communities from the top of our watershed in Atlanta and Athens through Middle Georgia, where much of our coal ash is found, and ending on the Georgia coast. I personally have been looking into these coal ash ponds around the Altamaha watershed for the past 5 years, which includes 4 plants and 9 ponds. Jeanette just mentioned plant arkwright, which is a closed plant, and the ponds are considered closed by being capped in place, which means that the water has been taken out of them and dirt and some grass seed has been put on top of them. They've been closed for over a decade, and Altamaha Riverkeeper and Waterkeeper Alliance have tested leaks from one of these ponds multiple times, and despite their age, they continue to leak heavy metals such as arsenic and thallium into a small creek that dumps into the Okmulgee River in Macon. We also have Plant McManus in Brunswick, which is now closed, and it has 1 coal ash pond. Georgia Power, when it excavated it, which we were happy with the idea of excavating it and putting it into a lined and capped facility, the latter of which is not being done, but the first part of excavating it is being done. And then Hurricane Irma hit in 2017, and it completely refilled the pond. Both Georgia Power and our regulatory agency, our state regulatory agency, our Environmental Protection Division, claim time and time again how great the water quality is there at the area where this pond has been dewatered and is being excavated. And that's largely because the water outside the pond is part of Georgia's coast and is flushed by the Atlantic Ocean twice daily. So while I couldn't actually test the water, I did test a sludge that had accumulated outside of the pond. And in that sludge, we did find the presence of heavy metals, arsenic, thallium, selenium, and some other ideas. And during the hurricane, Hurricane Irma in 2017, when these ponds were refilled and overflowed, we really just unfortunately have no idea how much coal ash washed into Georgia's marshes. Our third plant is Plant Branch in Milledgeville. Also in the Altamaha watershed, and as such, we've been looking at those ponds around Lake Sinclair, again, for several years. And all of these ponds we have found to be leaking into Lake Sinclair, both in the surface water as well as the groundwater. We provided some samples, and Duke University independently tested those samples from around these coal ash ponds and published the surface water exceedances in the report. Shortly after that, Georgia Power said they were going to go ahead and excavate those ponds. I don't know for sure that those two things are connected, but we are pleased that our continued pressure and our community's voice has hopefully influenced Georgia Power to excavate and put all of that coal ash into a lined and capped facility on site. And our final plant is Plant Shearer. It is located in the town of Juliet, Georgia, north of Macon, and this is just an enormous plant. I do not have the data to prove this or the facts, but I keep hearing that it is the largest one in the Western Hemisphere. It's the largest CO2 producer, the largest coal ash producer, but I would recommend somebody double-checking that before printing anything like that. Anyway, what we can say is that it's huge. And there are a lot of concerns around Plant Shearer. The first being that there are 3 large ponds around Plant Shearer, and only one of them is legally labeled a coal ash pond. One of the others is considered a runoff pond. So the latter means that when the legally determined coal ash pond is full and it runs over, it runs into this eerily blue-green pond next to it, the runoff pond. And that only has a rock and mud dam protecting it from dumping into Lake Juliet. Altamaha Riverkeeper tested surface water seeps around these ponds and found high levels of heavy metals. So as you can hear, a lot of this has been surface water testing that we can do. So to echo Jeanette, we are just so very excited to have this report now to really understand what Georgia Power themselves are finding in the groundwater there. At Plant Sure, we also tested private drinking water wells at properties that were found alongside the coal ash ponds on a road called Luther Smith Road, and found concerning levels of hexavalent chromium, which is the same pollutant, and we found it at similar levels as was found in the famous Aaron Brockovich case. We tested 5 wells, and all of them had hexavalent chromium levels 33 to 70 times the 1-to-1 ratio million lifetime cancer risk. So while those numbers get a little wonky sounding, you can understand that 33 to 70 times your normal lifetime cancer risk is quite an increase. Since our testing of those wells in 2017, Georgia Power has since purchased all of these properties and filled the drinking water wells with concrete. I did get to see one of the real estate agreements, and they include a liability clause, which releases Georgia Power of any medical responsibilities for these folks, whether that's real or perceived, past, present, or future. And unfortunately, these property owners, now that they have sold their property, are no longer able to speak on their experience. However, I have spoken to them before, and I'm happy to speak on their behalf. So our independent testing, coupled with Georgia Power's groundwater testing that's shown and represented in this report, show beyond any doubt that these coal ash ponds are leaking on the surface and into our groundwater. They have been for years. They continue to pollute our communities' recreation and drinking water. And in order to protect our communities, Georgia Power absolutely must excavate all of these ponds. And I'm going to turn it over to April to talk a little bit more about that process. And I thank you so much, all of you, for helping put this report together, and all of you on the call for listening to this information. This is a huge, huge issue for our state, and we hope to be moving forward in protecting our communities.
Thanks, Jen. And for everyone out there, there is a map showing the locations of all these plants in the report, which you can find at www.environmentalintegrity.org or earthjustice.org. Jen mentioned, of course, the plant Harley Branch, which is located southeast of Atlanta in Milledgeville. She also mentioned the Shearer plant. That's in central Georgia in the town of Juliet. Now our final speaker is going to be April Lipscomb, staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. It's APRIL, April Lipscomb, LIPSCOM. April Lipscomb, staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. Go ahead, April.
Thank you. And quick correction, last name has a B at the end, so it's LIPSCOMB. Again, I'm a staff attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. I'm here in the Atlanta, Georgia office. And I'd like to thank all the prior speakers for touching on the pervasive problems that we are seeing with the coal ash ponds in Georgia, going over the extent of the contamination that we're seeing. I'm going to cover some of the solutions and what do we do next now that we know just how bad the groundwater contamination is here in Georgia. Well, the only solution that we know works to stop groundwater pollution from coal ash is to dig it up. So all coal ash should be excavated and moved to dry, lined storage facilities out of groundwater and away from rivers, lakes, and streams. Unfortunately, Georgia Power plans to leave the overwhelming majority of its coal ash, about 57 million tons, in unlined leaking pits that are saturated by groundwater and are way too close to the rivers and lakes that Georgians depend on and enjoy. Now, Georgia Power claims that it will monitor the groundwater surrounding these pits for 30 years and that this will somehow prevent additional groundwater contamination from happening, but nothing could be further from the truth. As long as this toxic pollution remains in unlined pits, even drained and covered up coal ash will eventually leak and lead to groundwater contamination. So any solution to address this toxic pollution has to last forever. Again, excavation is the only sure solution. Where utilities have done the appropriate analysis and excavated their coal ash, such as in South Carolina, they have seen dramatic drops in groundwater contamination. For example, at the SCENG facility, arsenic groundwater contamination plummeted by 60 to over 90% after coal ash was removed and sent to dry lined storage. And that's possible here. Georgia Power itself has shown that excavation is possible and feasible. It plans to excavate coal ash at some of its smaller sites, And now Georgia Power should extend that commitment and remove all of its coal ash to modern lined and permitted landfills away from Georgia's waters. Beyond Georgia Power simply doing the right thing, the Georgia Environmental Protection Division should also strengthen its coal ash rules to adequately address and stop this ongoing groundwater contamination. So, for example, the state's coal ash rules should also explicitly require excavation where groundwater contamination is occurring, and that includes those coal ash ponds and landfills that are not currently regulated by state and federal law that Abel referred to earlier on in the introduction. We also don't know if any of this coal ash is polluting drinking water and the extent to which coal ash may be polluting drinking water. So because of that, EPD should also require the testing of all residential and municipal drinking water wells that are located within a half mile of coal ash ponds. The public deserves to have this information and this data. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that Georgia Power is planning to monitor these closed coal ash sites for 30 years, but that 30-year duration is a completely arbitrary number. Coal ash is not just going to disappear after 30 years. So the duration of groundwater monitoring around closed coal ash ponds and unlined landfills should really extend to the lifetime of those storage units. And speaking of monitoring, the frequency of groundwater monitoring really should be increased to at least quarterly, if not monthly. Right now, the groundwater monitoring only has to occur on a semi-annual basis, and that's just not enough for us to know exactly what's happening. That monitoring data should also be posted immediately on publicly available websites. There are, you know, a host of other recommendations that we could make to address groundwater contamination. I'll refer all of you to pages 25 and 26 of the report to look at some of those. But the bottom line really is this. These unlined coal ash pits and landfills are ticking time bombs, and they do not belong on Georgia's rivers, lakes, and groundwater. And as we're approaching the 10-year anniversary of TVA's Kingston spill, you know, we're all reminded of that. Excavation is the only real solution. Thank you.
Thank you, April. That was April Lipscomb, staff attorney for the Southern Environmental Law Center. That's APRILLIPSCOMB. April Lipscomb. Now we're going to take some questions from reporters. Jessica, could you tell the journalists how to ask questions?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone who has a question to press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We will wait for just a moment for the Q&A roster.
Star one.
Star one. Okay, we do have two questions in queue. And our first question comes from the line of Mary Landers with the Savannah Morning.
Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks. That's Savannah Morning News. Thanks for having us today. I have a bunch of questions, and I might want to follow up maybe with you, Jeanette. But real quickly, why are plant crafts ponds exempt from the federal rule?
Abel, do you know that, or Lisa?
Is anybody exempt?
Yeah, so the rule covers inactive impoundments, but that definition means an impoundment that has ash and water in it as of October 2015. So any impoundments that were dry, and that whether or not the impoundment is dry is kind of a point of contention depending on who you're talking to. But if a pond is dry before October of 2015, then it's not covered by the rule. And the same is true for landfills. Landfills that aren't active as of October 2015 are not regulated by the rule.
Okay, so that power plant was closed before then, so that's why.
Yep.
So Georgia Power this morning sent out a press release, they say coincidentally, about this same topic. And they're saying that, you know, they had released groundwater monitoring data 18 months ago or 18 months early, and that monitoring showed, I'll quote here, no identified risk to public health or drinking water. So I'm wondering, you know, what it is about that statement that might make it true but not enough, or, you know, how would you dissect that statement?
Yeah, I'm happy to take...
Go ahead, Abel Rest.
And I'll let Lisa elaborate, but, you know, real briefly, as Lisa mentioned, you know, there's not a lot of monitoring of drinking water wells. So one thing is that, you know, they're not going to find what they're not looking for. But the other thing about this is that this is a really long-term threat. And this is, in some ways, the early stages of it. And when EPA did the modeling to support their coal ash rule in 2015, they determined that the peak offsite concentration, meaning the most unsafe concentration of these coal ash pollutants to nearby residents, is going to happen 70 or hundreds of years in the future. And so it's not something that we would expect to see all of the evidence of right now. It's something that we're trying to prevent rather than something we're trying to clean up, although there is cleanup involved. You know, we're trying to prevent this contamination from leaving the place where it is now, which is in a relatively contained place. Once it's migrated into the groundwater and started moving, it's much, much harder to deal with, and that's why we want to ensure that all the coal ash that's sitting there, available to become a future threat, is moved to a safer place where it won't happen.
That was Abel Russ responding.
That was Abel Russ of Environmental Integrity Project. Lisa Evans, do you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I'd like to challenge Georgia Power to indicate where it has sampled residential drinking water wells and municipal drinking water wells within a half mile of its coal ash ponds. It's easy to say you haven't found contamination when you haven't looked. In North Carolina, when testing of drinking water wells within a half mile of coal ash ponds was mandated by the state, Duke Energy had to supply drinking water to numerous communities. So I think the jury is certainly out on whether there are any domestic wells impacted and whether any nearby surface waters are harmed by the leaking ponds.
This is Abel again. If I can just jump in to follow up on that point, Lisa, sorry to interrupt you, but we often talk about the health risks to humans from drinking contaminated groundwater, and that's certainly important. But I'm glad you mentioned surface water, because that frequently gets ignored, and I think when Georgia Power makes a statement like that, they're also ignoring it. Because what happens is a lot of this contamination gets into surface water, and then it moves. It moves downstream, and it gets into the food chain, and you have contaminated fish that might be caught and consumed relatively far away from a coal plant. And a lot of the human health risk, at least to the extent that EPA quantified it when they were writing the rule, comes from that, comes from eating contaminated fish. And there's no way Georgia Power knows whether or not that's a problem. And same for just plain old surface water quality downstream. Nobody really knows if that's a problem. We suspect that it is, but it's hard to prove either way.
That was Lisa
Evans.
Surface water
is our drinking water.
Exactly. Right.
And I would also give Jeanette the opportunity to respond. Jen Hilburn, who mentioned the high levels of selenium, to follow up on Abel's point. So selenium is a bioaccumulative toxin. It gets into aquatic life. It goes up the food chain. Has Georgia Power addressed the contamination of selenium going from its ponds into surface water, into marshes? I think that, again, they haven't looked. Therefore, they haven't found. Not that it's not there.
Gotcha.
Hi, this is Jen. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hey, Jen. Good. How are you?
I just want to. I'd like to challenge Georgia Power as well as Lisa did. I would argue that a big part of the decision making to excavate all of the ponds at Plant Branch were directly related to this exact question. So the Sinclair Water Authority pulls its water for Putnam and Baldwin counties within about a quarter of a mile. Actually, it's a little shorter of a distance out of Lake Sinclair, directly across from these coal ash ponds. And during multiple conversations with Georgia Power, as well as community meetings and forums, the Sinclair Water Authority, you know, stated their concern about these surface leaks, not even getting into the groundwater leaks. As did the communities, and of course, as did I. So I would argue that was a big part of their Georgia Power's consideration to go ahead and close these ponds. They had started 4 years ago with absolutely no way are we going to excavate, but we're going to cap in place. That moved to we're going to excavate the ponds closest to the lake, put them in the larger pond that's inaccessible to the community and cap that one in place to where we are today, thankfully, which is that they intend to excavate all of the ponds and put them in a lined capped facility on site. But I, again, as Lisa Evans stated, they're not looking, so they're not finding. But this was brought up over and over again by the community, as well as the Sinclair Water Authority, as well as the local legislators in that area. So I think they are aware of it. They're able to say they don't know anything about it because they haven't looked. But I don't think that they're truly believing that that's not a concern.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great.
Great. And
I do have one more if I can continue.
Go ahead. Yeah, okay, real quick, that was Jen Hilburn, the Altamaha Riverkeeper, speaking. And so go ahead with your next question.
Okay, so on page 6 of the report, I think I understand what you're saying, but are you saying when you're talking about the, I forget what you call them, upstream or upgradient areas that they look at, are you saying that it's kind of a loophole because some of the comparison is to already polluted wells? So you're saying, well, it's not that much worse than what's upgradient, so
yes,
it's okay.
That is, yeah, I think you're reading it correctly. A lot of times we've seen this across the country. It's not just in Georgia. The owner of a site will install an upgrading well because it's upgrading of a unit that happens to be regulated. And frequently what happens is that there's another unregulated unit adjacent to that one, or in some cases the groundwater is actually flowing away from the regulated unit in all directions. And so this well that they think is upgrading or that they're calling upgrading is not actually in fact upgrading. And so what ends up happening then is that when you do a statistical comparison between the downgrading and the upgrading well, even if that pond is leaking, it might not appear to be statistically significantly different.
Gotcha.
Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from Christy Swartz with E&E News.
Go ahead, Christy.
Hi, good afternoon. I know that you all have tried to go to the legislature to make changes, and that's been a rocky road at best, as we've seen Georgia Power's tight connections with EPD and others, so it's been kind of tough to get the law changed. Is that, are you going to try to go down that road again, or what are your plans going forward?
Jeanette Geyer, do you want to tackle that one?
I can, yeah. Hi, Christy.
Hey.
I think there are two things we'll be looking at during this upcoming legislative session. One, and I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but at the end of the last legislative session, something passed that allows coal ash to be disposed in regular landfills, so not even coal ash landfills, but these are like mass solid waste landfills.
Okay.
That allows coal ash to be disposed for cheaper than effectively normal household waste. So we'll definitely be addressing that situation in the upcoming legislative session. And then also expect some of the bills that we worked on in the last legislature to be reintroduced in this upcoming legislative session. And those look at things like public notice and dewatering and, a couple different aspects of this problem.
Okay. To be clear on that bill that passed, what I'm gleaning from this is the challenge of it going into regular landfills, then clearly they're not as protected as ones that will be used specifically for coal ash. Is that the issue?
I think the biggest issue there is coal ash is a toxic waste, and we think if you're going to put it in a landfill, then you should be giving the communities that are accepting this waste the resources that they're going to need long-term to deal with it. So it's a little more nuanced than that maybe, but that's where we're coming from.
That was Jeanette Geyer, Director of Environment Georgia. Jen Hilburn or April Lipscomb, do you want to touch on that as well? If not, we can move on to the next question.
This is Jen, and I think Jeanette said it well. We've sort of struggled. We spent a lot of time working our legislators and ourselves in Georgia Power trying to create bills that they wouldn't fight us with, and our legislators, a vast majority of them, have been very frustrated in the fact that they could not even pass a bill that gave a 30-day notice to the community before these ponds were dewatered, treated coal ash water put into the nearby lakes and rivers. So the legislators that we are working with are still very much interested in moving forward with bills. I just think that we'll probably have to continue, and this report is one of the many tools. So we thank you again so much, Environmental Integrity Project and Earth Justice, for compiling this massive amount of data I never could have done. And I have sent it to all of our legislators that sponsored and co-sponsored our bills. And I know that there are many that are still very interested in moving forward with stronger bills. I just think it will take some time and strategy.
That was Jen Hilburn, the Altamaha Riverkeeper. Any other questions?
Our next question comes from Alexa Denigal with WGXA.
Go ahead, Alexa.
Hi, everyone. A lot of my questions were already answered by the previous reporter, so thank you guys for that. But one thing I just wanted to get clarification on, in April, I believe you mentioned this, that there's 57 tons of coal ash in Georgia only, or is that around the country, throughout the country?
April Lipscomb, go ahead.
Yeah, so by our estimates, Georgia Power has approximately 86 million tons of coal ash that they've stored at their own power plants. About 29 million tons of that ash is going to be excavated and moved to dry lined storage. And that leaves about 57 million tons left that they are planning to leave in those unlined leaking pits and just cover them up.
Gotcha.
So that's a Georgia-only number.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. And
one small
question, if possible. I know you guys mentioned one of the coal ash ponds that's leaking into Lake Sinclair. And I know we did a story a while back and we talked to residents who was actually playing in Lake Sinclair. I guess what kind of a message would you guys have for, you know, residents here locally that, you know, I know you guys are, quote, unquote, fighting the good fight, so to speak, but just so that what guarantee can you guys give that the situation can at least be constantly brought to light?
Jeanette Gay, do you want to try that? Or Abel, go ahead.
This is Jen Hilburn. I'd be happy to.
Go ahead. Go for it.
So, all of the ponds, and not just one, all of the ponds are leaking both surface water and groundwater into Lake Sinclair. And I myself am lucky enough to spend time at a lake house there, and I fish and I swim and occasionally water ski, kayak and paddle and all kinds of things in the lake. It is an enormous quantity of water that is in Lake Sinclair as well as Lake Oconee above it. So while there is this is not at all okay to think of, the solution is dilution. I do think that the quantity of water as well as the Oconee River continuing to input water into the lake probably, at least I believe, makes it safe enough for us to swim and continue recreating in it. The concern is more when they were going to go through the process of closing and dewatering, and I would like to speak with you offline after this call because I have a different press release coming out tomorrow about one of my concerns of dewatering these ponds, a very different sort of thing, is that then they would be putting in tons and tons of these heavy metals, and death by a thousand cuts is still death, so we wanted to make sure that didn't happen. I do think the enormous quantity of water found in both Lakes Oconee and Sinclair, and you probably know that one gets pumped back up to another for the hydroelectric power, just that enormous quantity of water makes it safe enough for us to continue to recreate. Again, the Water Authority, as well as the rest of the community and myself, were very concerned about the dewatering and putting these millions of tons of toxic heavy metal-laden waters directly into Lake Sinclair. And unfortunately, I do not have an answer for you, and I do not think anybody else does, about the safety and the heavy metal contaminants that might be accumulating in the fish there, which is really concerning because, as you may know, we have, you know, our blue catfish records are all out of Lake Sinclair, and catfish, being bottom dwellers, tend to accumulate a lot of these types of heavy metals.
That was Jen Hilburn, the Altamaha Riverkeeper. Okay, any other questions?
Tom, I just want to add this is Lisa Evans from Earth Justice. I think Jen points to the necessity of testing water, sediment, and fish in a lake like Lake Sinclair and other lakes that receive coal ash pollution to ensure that there is not high levels, particularly of selenium or other heavy metals, in the fish, sediment, or water. So this should be something that is done consistently and regularly, and the results should be publicized to the public. Again, there's no substitute for full information for the community on what toxic threats may exist.
Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from Molly Samuel with WABE.
Go ahead, Molly.
Hi there. Since some of these coal ash ponds have been around a long time, and the testing has come back relatively recently showing the plumes not being that, you know, relatively that far out, I mean, is there any comfort to be taken in that?
I don't think so. I think one of the reasons you're seeing that is just because the wells are installed in a ring around an impoundment, and you don't really have a sense from the placement of the wells how far the plume is going. And I think what often happens is that the plume it intercepts a surface water body or something like that. So the groundwater is going into a river, and so you wouldn't see it past that point. But I think, like I was saying before, I don't take a lot of comfort in that because this is something that's expected to get worse over time, and this is still early stages of that happening.
That was Abel Russ of the Environmental Integrity Project. Anyone else?
Yeah, Molly, this is Jen Hilburn again. And I would say that while it may not be as noticeably impactful or immediately impactful, and you're talking about years of it going on, we have the reason I ended up going to Plant Shearer and testing the drinking water wells of the neighbors along these coal ash ponds was because Georgia Power themselves had put up their monitoring wells nearby, and this is coming from the property owners themselves, told me that just about 2 weeks after they installed those wells is when they started going around, they being Georgia Power, looking to purchase these properties, which, like I said, they have now purchased them all, and the wells are full of concrete. And based on the samples or the testing that we received, I suspect that these wells have been contaminated for quite some time. I cannot do any kind of direct link, nor will I try to say that it is the coal ash that has caused this, but quite literally everyone along that road has been quite sick. Many of them have died from cancer or have cancer, and they would be, well, they're not able to now that they've signed this real estate agreement with Georgia Power, but they before were more than happy to share all of the different issues, health issues and problems that people had there. And these are family homes that had them for generations, and they attributed this to being next to the coal ash pond and have happened since these health issues have happened since the coal ash pond was there. So unfortunately, it's very, very difficult to make that kind of a direct link. So it's very anecdotal, this information. But you do have wells with hexavalent chromium much, much higher than your normal cancer risk. Then you have a community that has a high incidence of cancer. So I would consider that suspicious.
And this is Jen Hilburn. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is April Lipscomb, Molly at SELC. Just also to add something, you know, we're seeing more flooding, more major, you know, storm events happening in Georgia, hurricanes coming through. Not only do these unlined coal ash ponds leak and pollute groundwater, they're basically disasters waiting to happen every time there's a major storm or flood. So even if this groundwater contamination is, you know, slowly moving, if we get a major flood event and these things get completely inundated, you're talking about the potential for a lot of coal ash to to move and to result in some severe contamination after such an event.
Thanks.
All right, next question.
Our next question comes from Grant Blankenship with Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Go ahead, Grant.
Hi. About the data set that this report comes from, it was made possible by this rule that's now being rolled back. How confident are you that you'll ever get this robust a data set again about coal ash ponds? And what are you doing going forward to ensure that you continue to get this sort of data? And then the third question is, what do you have planned in court to force some of these rule changes that you're seeking?
Lisa Evans of Earth Justice, you want to tackle that?
Sure. Great question. So we fortunately won a big victory in August of this year, which we hope will protect the 2015 rule. And I think it's really important to point out that it took until 2015 for the federal EPA to put its first ever coal ash rule on the books. Companies like Georgia Power do not want this data out there. They don't want to be forced to monitor, and they for sure don't want to be forced to divulge the data publicly. So, as you're pointing out, this robust data set is extremely valuable, and it has to keep going. So when we won in the Court of Appeals last August, the Court of Appeals ruled that the 2015 rule was actually on many levels not strong enough. The Obama rule was not protective enough, and the EPA is going to have to strengthen the rule in numerous ways. The fact that we have this ruling, I think, does not insulate us from the rollbacks I talked about earlier today, the two rules that we expect to come roughly in the next 6 months, but the first one as early as this month. It doesn't insulate us, but it certainly gives us a fighting chance to argue that the federal waste law, the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, requires a level of protection of health and the environment from the solid waste produced by these utilities that will not allow the Trump administration and Andrew Wheeler in particular to backslide into protecting those industries and hiding this information. And one of the most important things, as you pointed out, is the monitoring of groundwater and the continuing publication of that, which eventually needs to require cleanup. I mean, it's one thing for us to know about all the contamination, which we do now. The next thing is for that contamination to trigger actual cleanup so that we can make sure that those communities and the water resources are not permanently impacted.
But just to be clear, until you successfully fight in court for more monitoring like this, this feels like a one-time snapshot, this huge snapshot.
Well, on the contrary, the 2015 monitoring requirements are still exist. Those have not been rolled back. There was a huge proposal to roll requirements back in March, but those have not been finalized. So, for instance, companies are under the requirement from the 2015 rule that they have to produce a whole nother round of monitoring as robust as we saw last year, and they will be putting that monitoring data on January 31st, it's due to be placed in their operating records, and on March 2nd, it will be published again for all the public to see. So we'll have another year of monitoring data.
Okay, great. So that's in March, we'll have the next round of data just as dense as this.
I'm sorry?
I was saying in March, we'll have the next set of data that's just as dense as what you've reported from today.
We will, and we hope that that industry like Georgia Power doesn't try to hide the ball again and publish 2,400 pages of lab data as Abel described, and that we'll be able to move forward much quickly with assessing the new data. But I don't hold up too much hope that there will be better transparency in 2019, but we're hoping to see it.
And I'll just add that the status quo right now, unless anything changes, and I haven't seen any proposals to change these requirements, the monitoring requirements are long-term under the rules. So they have to monitor if they get to the point where they have detected contamination and they're in assessment monitoring and they're finding contaminants that are unsafe, they have to monitor for 30 years or until the groundwater gets back to groundwater standards. So we anticipate seeing more data every year for a long time.
That was Abel Russ of the Environmental Integrity Project, and before that, Lisa Evans of Earth Justice. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay, next question.
Our final question comes from Samantha Mack with The Telegraph.
Go ahead, Samantha.
Hi, my question is just really for the people who are living by plant shearer and who are drinking that potentially contaminated water, what should they be worried about?
This is Jen Hilber, your Altamaha Riverkeeper, and first I would say that most of those people's properties have been purchased and they have moved away. So the things those people were worried about and that we reported back to them when we did the testing was high levels of hexavalent chromium, and that is a known carcinogen. So we recommended that they start drinking bottled water. I believe Georgia Power has done a pretty thorough job of buying up properties within about a half a mile from all of the coal ash ponds at Plant Shearer. Although if you have spent some time in Juliet, in that area, you are probably familiar. You'll see it spray painted on the side of buildings that Georgia Power is killing people. You'll see it on the stop signs, and it's definitely a very common conversation for people to be sharing and engaging in around Plant Shearer, and that is the high incidence of cancer and illnesses. I would recommend, if someone was living near those areas, to have their wells independently tested for some of the pollutants that you would find in coal ash, including arsenic and thallium, selenium, hexavalent chromium, and some others, and probably from that point on, react accordingly. I hate to recommend that people start drinking bottled water just because of the plastics that bottled water is, but I'm much more concerned about their health. At this time, Georgia Power has not shared any intention to either test those wells with the remaining property owners nearby or do anything to help them. I know in North Carolina, Duke Utility was required to provide some of the neighbors with drinking water, and they have been drinking bottled water, some of them, for multiple years. As the issue itself in the groundwater, as has been mentioned before, is very, very challenging to deal with and mitigate. And I would
love that answer your question? Go ahead.
I would love to speak with you more offline if you want to talk about it, because we have now had the success at Plant Branch, where Georgia Power has announced they are going to excavate all of the coal ash ponds, and Altamaha Riverkeeper and our partners, Georgia Water Coalition, will be working very hard to make the same thing happen at Plant.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. All right. Now we're at the one-hour mark, and I hope we've wrapped up all of our questions. Any more questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for participating. If you have any follow-up questions, you can reach me, Tom Pelton, at the Environmental Integrity Project at 202-888-2703. That's 202-888-2703. Thanks, everyone, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.